The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
Hold on, stop right there. If you have not seen Doctor Who, The 11th Hour, the first episode of Matt Smith as the Doctor, stop the podcast right now and save it until you have.
There's a crack in my wall. Aunt Sharon says it's just an ordinary crack, but I know it's not, because at night there's voices. Thank you, Santa.
Can I have an apple?
Are you a policeman?
Why? Did you call a policeman?
Did you come about the crack in my wall? Who are you?
I don't know yet. I'm still cooking. I'm the doctor.
If you're a doctor, why does your book say police?
What's your name?
Amelia Pond.
Oh, that's a brilliant name. So your aunt? Where is she?
She's out.
And she left you all alone?
I'm not scared.
Of course you're not. You're not scared of anything. Box falls out of the sky, man falls out of a box, man eats fish custard. And look at you. Just sitting there. So you know what I think?
What?
Must be a hell of a scary crack in your wall.
Eat apples. My mum put faces on them.
She sounds good, your mum. I'll keep it for later. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Do you know what the crack is?
What?
It's a crack. But I'll tell you something funny. If you knock this wall down, the crack would stay put, because the crack isn't in the wall.
Where is it then?
Everywhere. In everything. It's a split in the skin of the world. Two parts of space and time that should never have touched. Pressed together, right here in the wall of your bedroom. Sometimes, can you hear?
A voice, yes.
Prisoner Zero.
Prisoner Zero has escaped. That's what I heard. What does it mean?
It means that on the other side of this wall there's a prison, and they've lost a prisoner. And you know what that means?
What?
You need a better wall.
The only way to close the breach is to open it all the way. The forces will invert, and it'll snap itself shut. Or...
what?
You know when grown-ups tell you everything's going to be fine, and you think they're probably lying to make you feel better?
Yes.
Everything's going to be fine.
Live from the crack in your bedroom wall, it's Doctor Who, Podshock.
Doctor Who, Podshock.
Okay, well... let's do it now. You know, whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Lewis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
Over 40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you? Who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy, celebrating its 25th year, presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 190. This is Lewis Trapani, and joining me is Ken Deep and Dave A.C. Cooper. Actually, they'll be joining me in just a second. This is our live over-the-internet show reviewing Doctor Who, The 11th Hour, the first full story with Matt Smith as the Doctor. So if you have not seen this story yet already, you may want to take this podcast and just save it in your pocket or a crack in your wall until you have seen it. So we're going to go right to our live show, recorded on Sunday, the 5th of April, the day after the BBC One transmission of The 11th Hour. Again, we realize that many other people have not seen this episode yet because it's coming on BBC America on the 17th, and I believe ABC in Australia on that time as well. I believe in Canada as well. So just save this Doctor Who Podshock until you have seen it. And this is our live show We're reviewing The 11th Hour. This is Louis Trapani, and along with me is my ever-so-faithful co-host, Mr. Ken Deep.
Hello.
Hey, Ken.
Howdy.
Ken is, I think he's calling from work, so I know
his
time is probably going to be limited and sporadic here. Also with us is none other than Dave A.C. Cooper.
Hi, Louis. Hi, Ken. Hi, everyone.
Ken, Dave is joining us from across the Great Pond, otherwise known as the Atlantic. And speaking of the Great Pond and the UK, James Norton, our usual co-host, is unavailable for this live show today, but he does send his regards, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more from James very shortly in regards to the 11th Hour and the upcoming series, new series of Doctor Who that we're in right now. So I hope everyone's as excited as I am, because I'm very excited about this particular story and also the new era of Doctor Who that we're in. So it's the 11th Hour. Matt Smith this is his first full episode as the Doctor, and I have to say that he is amazing. And if there was ever any doubt that he was the Doctor, I'm sure that has been now erased. At least I mean, I didn't have any doubts to begin with, because I was holding out judgment until we actually see him in action. And I think this story puts all those doubts to rest, at least in my eyes. So I felt he was amazing. I thought, well, the whole cast was amazing. Karen Gillan was fantastic. Even her cousin, who played Amelia, the young Amy Pond, or Amelia Pond, whatever, was fantastic. And interesting, I did not know. I knew that they were cousins. I knew they were related, but it wasn't until The Confidential that I saw that I found out that they hadn't met until then, which I just assumed that they, you know, did, you know. So that was interesting. Stephen Moffat, well, I think he hit a home run. I don't usually use sports analogy, but I think right out of the first time at bat here with the new series, I think he did it. And I think that's what he needed to do, and I think they all accomplished it. I'm going to go through some points, and I'm going to get Ken on here, too, and Dave, and we're going to get to our callers. We only have an hour today, so we're going to try to get everyone in as much as we can. And those that can't get into the show, feel free to send us your audio feedback about the 11th Hour to send it to feedback@podshock.net. Or you can call our public call box as well. Go to our website, thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net, and there's up on the top on the menu, there's a little button for feedback, and that will give you all the different options on how to send us your feedback. So, yeah, getting back to the 11th Hour, when I first saw it, I tweeted out, wow, amazing, or no, I think it was wow, fantastic, but it amounts to the same thing. I'm really psyched for this new series. I think this story has re-energized. I mean, it's renewal. It's a new Doctor, but I think it's renewal on so many different levels. And personally, it's a renewal for me as well, because it really re-energized my excitement for Doctor Who. And I haven't really felt this way since 2005 with that first series when it came back. It's a whole brand new adventure, really. And I'm excited about it. So just some key points to point out. I'm sure everyone's going to have some comments about it. But obviously there's a new opening titles music, which is I have no problems with. I thought it was great. In that opening animated sequence, that was redone as well. Obviously with the new titles, the TARDIS going through that sequence, there's lightning hitting the TARDIS, and there's no face. So all those rumors about the face, unless it's coming up soon in upcoming in stories, that wasn't really there. So that squelches those rumors there. The music overall in the whole episode, I thought, had a different tone to it. So I think that was good, because it kind of separates it from the past era. With other Stephen Moffat stories, this is written by Stephen Moffat, and the story, once again, time plays a factor in the story itself, which I like that. And once again, the Doctor doesn't really get his timing right, or the TARDIS timing right, which is very typical. And getting back to what I said about Matt Smith, I think he nails it. He's the Doctor, and there's something about Doctor number 11 that reminds me a bit of Doctor number 2 in many ways. In so many different scenes, I could actually replace him with Patrick Troughton there, and it would work just the same. It's I don't know, there's the subtleties that are just there that just reminds me to it, reminds me, puts me in the mind frame of him, which is great. I thought he did an incredible job. I thought the story itself was pretty much a simple story, really, as far as like the threat goes. There's like no, of course, yeah, the human race is about to be exterminated, but that was sort of the side threat. The prisoner itself was that enemy, that adversary was just a prisoner. It wasn't some overwhelming, you know, megalomaniac that was trying to destroy the universe and whatever. So I like that. I also like the fact that the Doctor, this is the first Doctor story, you know, after regeneration, the first new Doctor story, and he wasn't disabled throughout the whole story. There wasn't like this long half hour wait or whatever before the Doctor becomes the Doctor again. Sure, he's, you know, he's bumbling, he's awkward, he's still doesn't have his faculties all together yet, but he's still the Doctor, and that's established very early on. And it wasn't like, oh well, you know, we have to wait for the Doctor to get better before the Doctor comes into this episode, really. And that really wasn't that. I liked the way that it was handled, where it was immediately, you know, yes, he just came off of regeneration, that was made evident, but it wasn't a disabling factor. So I like that. There's a lot in this story to talk about, and I'm going to try to cover as much as I can. There's lots of little treats in here. I thought, and I know this is probably too late now, but if you haven't seen this story, this episode of Podshock will have spoilers in it. So if you haven't seen it, stop right now while you're listening to me and just save this until later, until you see it. I know it comes on BBC America on the 17th. I think also ABC in Australia in around the same date. So if you haven't seen it yet, stop listening and just save this episode until later. There's a scene here with coma patients. Again, this was written by Stephen Moffat. I thought it was a bit of a nod to maybe Empty Child. Not that he was ripping off his own work or anything, but it sort of hinted back to it, had that certain flavor to it. And, wow. I'm trying to get so much in here. I love the duck pond sequence, that scene where, how do you know it's a duck pond? There's no ducks. I thought, again, Matt Smith, with his little one-liners, the comedy elements in this were not overwhelming. They were not silly. They were basically a lot of one-liners, get a girlfriend and, you know, just little things like that really hit the mark and was comic relief without being silly. So I thought Matt Smith and obviously Stephen Moffat, who had written this episode, had wrote the script, did an excellent job handling the whole sequence about him eating and trying to find something that he could actually digest and eat. I thought it was marvelous. All lovely touches. If I had to nitpick, probably that whole duck pond sequence where she gets, you know, where he eventually gets locked into the car door by Amy Pond. I guess if I had to nitpick, I just that whole Dr. iCam thing, probably I would have handled that a little bit differently, but again, that's not a deal breaker.
Well, the hint of things to come.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's the other thing that the whole universe is cracked. You know, that whole back to the oncoming darkness type of thing. I wish that wasn't in the story. Again, not a deal breaker, but it's sort of it goes back to what we were seeing the past few years, which every series had something going on in the background. And it would be just nice to have maybe a series of stories that had no, you know, impending doom that was attached to it as a overall story arc going on in the background, because we've just seen so many of it in the past few years. So, but we'll see how this plays out. That goes back to the end of this episode where that's sort of revealed. I thought production-wise, it was good editing. Pacing was really there. The lighting was good. Good direction. Now, we see some reveals here. I thought the reveal that Rory, the character, the nurse there, was held off to the end, that he had some sort of relationship with Amy. I thought that was handled well. Oh, and I love the fact that so many people know the Doctor as the Raggedy Doctor from, you know, Amy's childhood stories and cartoons and dolls and whatever. I thought that was a lovely touch, and I thought that was a great, you know, element in this story. getting back to reveals, that revealing the interior of the TARDIS was fantastic, though I just wish the Radio Times didn't spoil it, because it would have been that much more amazing to see that firsthand watching this episode without seeing those photos first that Radio Times released. So I'm a little miffed at Radio Times for releasing those photos of the interior of the TARDIS before this episode, because I would like to have seen this. Well, I could have resisted or not seen those pictures myself, but it's kind of hard to avoid all spoilers here. And speaking of the new, we have a new exterior and interior of the TARDIS. I sort of like the way the TARDIS wasn't ready yet and it was still like working on it. And I just, again, and just, I thought that was handled well. A new Sonic news, almost a Sonic news driver, a new Sonic screwdriver, which is fine that the TARDIS sort of built it, though. I always assumed that the Doctor built it himself, always builds it himself, and so it's all right. It's fine. So, yeah, I thought this story was outstanding. I think it did what it needed to do. I think it needed to establish the 11th Doctor as the Doctor, and I think it does that very well. I only watched it a second time right before this live show here, and I was still getting chills of excitement watching it. It was just I really think they did a great job with this episode, and it's not many times that you can say that with a first Doctor story, you know, when you know, a new Doctor after regeneration. So usually they're not home runs. Usually it's usually the Doctor trying to find his way and his footing, but if this was sort of a haphazard episode, I can't imagine what's about to come. And I'm very excited seeing the coming attractions. And I mean, I was excited before, but after seeing this episode, I'm even more so excited. So, well, I guess maybe that's enough of me tongue wagging here. Just a lot of points that I wanted to get in. And Ken, are you still with us?
I am indeed.
So, Ken, I'll hand the mic to you and see what your thoughts about the 11th hour was.
Well, first, I think this rivals The Unearthly Child and Spearhead from Space as probably the greatest mm-hmm. introduction of a new Doctor. And Unearthly is, of course, sort of has an asterisk next to it, being it launched the whole darn series beyond launching a Doctor. It's fantastic. The story is everything we would want it to be from a Stephen Moffat story. It's still a light, fun family episode, but there were a few dark moments in this story that were mm-hmm. fantastic. When you're in Amy's home, or Amy's aunt's home, and you have this eye that pops out and there's these spooky moments, all that stuff works and is very Moffat. But at the same time, those who might have thought that we were suddenly going to go super dark, there's still, if you were a holdover from the David Tennant Fangirl Association, I think there's enough in this episode that that is similar to Russell's era to keep you around. In other words, it wasn't an entire revolution of the show. Yes, there's a new TARDIS, there's a new Doctor, there's a new writer, on and on. But if I was going to nitpick, I would say, similar to what you were saying, Lewis, is that there was a drop of the Russell Silence Will Fall thing, and I'm just first thought was, oh, come on.
Yeah.
We're not going to go through this for 13 episodes, are we? The darkness, the silence, the this is coming, that is coming, and it just better not be a Dalek or something really low-end, you know. I trust Moffat to bring whatever that's going to be and make it really dark and really exciting. Because everything in this episode that had been done before had Moffat's twist on it, which all seemed to work. Mm-hmm. The Doctor getting his clothes for the first time was handled in a way never seen before, even though the Eighth Doctor and the Third Doctor have grabbed clothes from somebody else. The point was, he changed, saying, I want to go look my best while defeating this enemy. That's never been done before.
Yeah.
The style of doing it was different and revolutionary.
Yeah, he changed right in front of us, more or less, and I thought that was
right in front of us. I thought the tying into the past Doctors was wonderfully handled. For those thinking that rumor that we had that he was playing William Hartnell's Doctor, here you were going from Hartnell all the way up to Chris Eccleston, you know, in a flash, you know, and it suddenly tied you in that this was the lineage that he comes from. their any doubts were put to rest. I think the new TARDIS interior will grow on me. I kind of like its quirkiness, and the cone, the horn from the perhaps from the Victrola in the Ace Doctor's movie. All these little touches I thought were wonderful. The Unearthly Child style ceiling above the time rotor, the blown glass, all that stuff. Wonderful stuff. But I would tell you this: if I'm ever the replacement, if I'm the next producer of Doctor Who after Stephen Moffat, and they're like, "Oh, congratulations, Kenny, here's your gig," I go back to a white console room that looks futuristic.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like the time machine to be a spaced out time machine again, and not a bucket of bolts. I'm not against it. I kind of get that it's supposed to be ramshackle, but part of me also says that I always enjoyed a good old-fashioned futuristic time machine and not a DeLorean.
Yeah, no, I understand that whole thing that it's supposed to be very ghetto, and it's like the Doctor scrabbling up whatever parts he had on hand, but the TARDIS was baking it. You know, if it does block transfer computations and it can form a shape of a police box or whatever, and it could delete rooms and all that, you think that it could, you know, create modernized buttons or what controls.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the TARDIS creating the sonic screwdriver for a number of reasons. We've already established in the recent series that it has a relationship with the TARDIS, mm-hmm. but also that when the Doctor went in there and was setting the thing to reboot the TARDIS, perhaps he set it to reboot a sonic screwdriver as well, or that he built it in that time. I mean, there's ways around it. Let's go right off the bat to Matt Smith. Matt Smith is the Doctor, mm-hmm. period. I simply say Matt nailed it. That's all that has to be said about that. He's the Doctor, period. It almost making me say David Who at some point. You know, as much as I enjoy David Tennant, and I thought, you know, I've gushed about David Tennant over the last couple of years, saying that we had the right guy as the Doctor. In typical Doctor Who form, the next guy comes along and he's wonderful. And in Moffat, we trust, and we should have trusted him when he said, "I found the guy, and he's younger, and he's only the third guy I saw," whatever it was. I mean, all those things worked out. Amy Pond is wonderful. She sounds like a fun companion. She's a total cutie. She's re-energized my like for the companion. A second nitpick, the whole wedding thing I saw coming a mile away when she said, "You sure you're going to have me back tomorrow?" I said, "Oh, she's getting married tomorrow." And there at the end, they have her wedding dress, and mm-hmm. she goes to this whole thing. And being that we had the runaway bride, the whole girl running away thing, I'm also going to make a prediction that it's not the other kid that she's marrying. I think that's just way too obvious.
Rory?
Rory, I think it would not surprise me if Moff's got somebody else in mind that she's marrying.
Mm-hmm.
And also the laptop saying myth on it reminds me a lot of Archangel. So I wonder what we're being set up for with the silence falling and the myth computers and some things like that. And I agree, though, that the patterns are starting to worry me. Yeah, it's a pattern, and luckily it's being handled by Moffat, who's bringing a fresh approach, and it is very fresh. I'm really enjoying it. But the current-day story, now going to the future story, then going back-in-time story, then going to a two-parter, and all the things that we've seen over the past couple of years repeating itself, including right off the bat the seed being planted for the season finale. If they would have planted the seed for the season finale about four or five stories in, I'd have no problem. I would say, again, they're breaking the pattern. They're going a few stories. But you said it right when you said that at least this story didn't have the end of time, the end of the earth, or this, the dimensional rift, the thing that it was a simple story. It was a small story. A prisoner escaped who is dangerous, and he's haunting, and they caught him, and they moved on. You know, a few unpredictable moments. I thought that the fire truck was going to go crashing through, and up comes a ladder popping through the window. Those kind of things done on a small, practical thing, a very believable approach. Those things for me really worked.
Yeah, same here.
The music, Murray Gold, one of the few holdovers from the RTD era. And like you said, he kind of reinvented his own way of doing things. The music was wonderful. I think the theme song will grow on people. I like that it's a little more electronic. They're trying to do their own thing. title sequence cool, TARDIS cool, costume cool, new Doctor cool. They're really, there's just, like you said, a wonderful chance to reboot the series, and it rebooted in my heart. You said you hadn't felt this way since Eccleston. I thought that Tennant's first season, I was really enthused about Tennant's first season as well. And I think really it was probably Donna's season, that third Tennant season, where I kind of said, okay, these patterns are getting under my skin. And then we went into these specials last year, which I thought kind of lost a little momentum. I'm very pleased to have a weekly show back that we can watch again, that I look forward. I'm counting down 6 days now till the next one. Those kind of things, getting back into a routine, having a regular show to watch, not waiting months to see Planet of the Dead, that kind of thing, to me, is what I'm excited about. Because what happens is if in this mix there is a dud of a story, you know a new story is going to come up, and it might make good on it.
True.
Because nobody's going to be perfect the first time out. The preview for the rest of the season is really, really exciting. I mean, to see some of the things that they want to visit and explore just looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. Another thing, just going back to the simplicity thing that Moffat handles so well, is the prisoner. It's simply, you know, the fact that there's a man barking. It's very simple. It's very low tech, but it's frightening just the same. And I think, again, I think that's what it goes back to. Are you my mommy? It's that same thing where it's a simple little phrase that a little boy could say could be so frightening. Yet, and he does it again with just having a man bark. I just thought it was just great.
Well, again, a tip of the cap to what John Pertwee used to say about, it's more frightening to come home and see a Yeti on your loo. He takes something that's very normal, very common, and suddenly twists it to the point where you're frightened of it. And so to have that moment, like you said, it almost harkened to a scene out of The Omen or something, mm-hmm. when you have a moment like that and you get the chills. But not to the point where it's this horror story. It's just supposed to be a bit chilling. And then no sooner are you chilled than the doctor has a funny moment to break that and have. And I agree with you. The humor never seemed forced. I really thought it was very natural that they have these little moments. And then really, I would give it as – even with the nitpicks, I got to give it 5 out of 5 for just a nice, solid opening story.
Yeah, I forgot to give my TARDIS Grown rating. That's what I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 as well.
If I had to be ultra critical, the lowest I could go is 4.5. If I was just going to sit there and just jab away at it for something like, to me, like a little nitpick, like the Silence Will Fall thing, which, you know, to me just says a little too Russell T. Davies for me. I'm hoping to move away from that. And there were a few other Russell-like moments in this, but at the same time, the argument could be made that you don't want to totally alienate anybody that was won over by Russell's style. Somebody who's come to the show who actually enjoys that stuff, mm-hmm. You don't want to alienate them. You want them to be brought into the fold and continue to be a Doctor Who fan.
Yeah, this is very much a bridging episode, bridging the Russell T. Davies era as well as the whole series, bridging it all together.
The smoke coming out of the TARDIS, the rebooting, the whole thing, just really spell. And also, how about the term Raggedy Doctor?
Yeah.
I mean, when we go to Gallifrey in February of 2011, how many of those little things that we get, those little ribbons we get, you think there'll be someone who has Raggedy Doctor on there? I would say there's a good chance.
I'm sure. We'll have people dressed up as that as well.
Yeah, you'll have people dressed up as the Raggedy Doctor. So much fun. It's just fun, period. Let's enjoy it and have a great time with it and know that Doctor Who is alive and well and has rebooted itself as it has done many times before, and it's fantastic, and we're all along for the ride.
Yeah, as I said, it's renewal on so many different levels, and it's just I'm just thrilled to bits.
The special effects were a little on the iffy side for me. I thought that maybe either maybe it was rushed or there was some issues.
Well, I know there's budget concerns. I think the budget was cut, and maybe they can't spend as much. But you know what? Doctor Who's traditionally have, you know...
We're suddenly making excuses for it again.
Well,
oh, you know,
mean, as long as you have good stories, good characters, I didn't think the effects weren't bad that it took me out of the story. It seemed like maybe they just didn't have the money to allocate that they had maybe in the past.
You know, maybe they're saving it for the Spitfires and space scenes, yeah, or stuff like that. So things that it didn't have. A lot of magical things. There were no soothsayers involved in here. You know, things like that. All that stuff to me was just a positive. There was no, you know, oh, I see this coming. Everything was practical.
Yes.
And it added it to its credibility and it added it to its realism. Because you could have a giant eye peeking through a crack and make it seem realistic if it's explained away that, well, this is an alien who's hiding. He's a prisoner. You know, oh, wow, that makes sense to me. But if you say to me, no, it's the darkness, and it's a, I see, I foretell, and no, come on, potions?
Yeah.
You know, there were no potions involved in this story.
Well, let's hopefully that will remain through the whole series, that we're not going to go in the... I mean, I think the stories can be magical, and I think Doctor Who could be magical without it being Harry Potter magical.
The magic comes from moments.
Yeah.
The magic comes from the lead actor being charming. There's magic to be had without waving a wand or just doing something overly fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's – I know there's a ton of people waiting, and we have a shorter episode today. So but there was a lot to talk about, and thumbs up. I always mention rewatch value. I've watched it twice already, and I'm on my way after work today to watch it a third time with some friends. So that should tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
And I'll head into the city for the New York City thing, too, and watch it there, too. It doesn't matter. I'll watch it as many times as someone wants me to.
Well, before Ken goes, I was going to say two things to him. No potion. What about fishing custard? I thought that was a potion.
No. What it was alien, and it certainly was alien. So.
And the other one was, who the man? Who the man? Matt Smith.
Well, what's beautiful is he pulls off a line like that. It makes you go, oh, no, they didn't just go there. And he goes, okay, I'm never saying
that
again.
I know, that was great.
Like, oh, thank God. Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I purely coincidental, but it came out on the same date as the Apple iPad. So that whole sequence with you got any apples? All I can do is think about apples, you know. Again, just...
Yeah, and all you've been doing is thinking about apples, I'm sure.
but the rest of this episode just has lots of little lovely touches in it that really hits it right on the mark. And, you know, I can nitpick on it, but it's not worth it. So Dave,
well, again, it goes to the quality.
Yeah.
If you think that everything is going on has a logical reason behind it, these little things are not a big deal. And that's the way we felt with Eccleston's era. Yeah, there were things that – little kind of tiny things that you could point to and say, oh, well, I would have done this a little bit differently. But genuinely, you believed in the – that the hearts were all in the right place.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the way I feel about this. And good for Moff. He's finally, you know, this is something he, too, has waited his whole life for. He's in the driver's seat, and hopefully he's steering us along for the ride. I will also want to point out in the confidential, watch carefully Matt Smith interact with the director of the story. There's a little scene where he's discussing about how he wants to say something. When you watch his creative process as an actor, you know the guy's got the right stuff. Because what he's doing in that the creativity is the right kind of creativity. I really have the time to express it any further than that. But to me, that was very, very telling, and it really lifted my confidence on him being the Doctor.
Yeah, I agree. I really can't say enough about Matt Smith and how excellent he was in this and how amazingly he pulled it off. And hats off to him.
Yep. Okay, everybody. Well, I'm looking forward to listen to everybody else's comments on this, because if somebody has a different take, I would love to hear it.
All right. Well, thanks, Ken. Let's get to Dave, and then we'll get to the people in the queue. So, Dave, what's your take?
Okay, well, I'll be pretty brief. I mean, I agree with all the things that you said. Oh, blimey, who's that?
Sorry, that was me.
I thought it was excellent. It was lovely to actually watch it, and I didn't nitpick. When we talked earlier on the other show, one or two things were brought to my mind, but the whole point was they glazed over me when I was watching it, because I got so behind the story, so behind the characters, and I thought it was a brilliant relaunch. I agree with... Well, two notes. One was this, I don't know why they had to bring this impending shadow of doom, because, let's face it, if the Earth is going to be destroyed in 17 minutes, does it really much matter what else is going to happen after that? You've got to save the world first, so that should have happened after the world was saved, when they might have said, well, you think it's all right now, but there's something else coming. But I would rather have that been left to later in the series. And the other thing is, I wasn't that keen on the spaceship. The eye was all right, but it looked a little bit much like the Christmas star. Mm-hmm. And as you say, there were lots of references back to the earlier stories. But I think the take on that is that it was to give people, you know, linchpins to latch onto that, you know, continuity. All right, the sets are new and everything. Yeah. And one thing I would stress again is that if you watch The Confidential, and by the way, I'm not saying that you need to watch The Confidential to enjoy the story. I've made that as a criticism before, where I didn't understand the program until I watched The Confidential, yeah. And
concerning
that's not
the
right.
Specials from you know, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Everything was there on the scene, but the Moffat was very clear to say this is not the 11th Doctor. Mm-hmm. This is the Doctor.
Exactly.
Might look different, might look different clothes, but it is one,
it's
you know,
same person
one creature. Yeah. And so, I mean, it's a shorthand we use as fans to say the 7th Doctor, the 11th Doctor, the 4th Doctor, or whatever. But it is easy for us to forget that basically it's the adventures of this one man travelling through time and space, which was great. And I'm also intrigued by this, and my son mentioned it to me, Matthew, and he was very supportive of this show because he wasn't really a Russell T Davies fan, but this myth symbol that was fairly prominently on
the computer,
on the laptop.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it may well be the lad that was operating the computer that Amy falls for, and really... I'm going to stand back and let other people go because they've had a long wait.
No! It's going to burn!
You've got a real time machine.
Not much longer if I can't get it stabilised. 5-minute hop into the future should do it. Celia! Are you all right? Are you there?
They all called out at once. All the coma patients.
Doctor.
Oi, you sit. You were breaking and entering.
Amelia, little Scottish girl, where is she? I promised for 5 minutes, but the engines were phasing. I suppose I must have gone a bit far. I need to speak to whoever lives in this house right now.
I live here.
Floor, how many rooms on this floor? Count them for me now.
Why?
Because it will change your life.
Five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Six.
Six.
Look.
Look where?
Exactly where you don't want to look, where you never want to look. The corner of your eye.
That's a whole room.
Get out! Get out!
Bad alien done to you. Just go, your backup's coming, I'll be fine.
There is no backup.
I heard you on the radio, you called for backup.
I was pretending, it's a pretend radio.
But you're a police woman.
I'm a kissogram.
Look at the faces.
What?
It's all one creature disguised as two. Clever old multi-form. Mind you, where'd you get the pattern from? You'd need a psychic link, a live feed. How'd you fix that?
What's that?
Well, safe apart from, you know, incineration. Run!
What's going on? Tell me!
An alien convict is hiding in your spare room, disguised as a man and a dog, and some other aliens are about to incinerate your house. Any questions?
Yes, you're late.
Amelia Pond, you're the little girl.
I'm Amelia, and you're late.
What happened?
12 years.
I was just about to phone. It's on every channel. Look, hello, Olivia. You're a policewoman now.
Well, sometimes.
I thought you were a nurse.
I can be a nurse.
Or actually a nun?
I dabble.
Amy... Who's your friend?
Who's Amy? You were Amelia.
Yeah, now I'm Amy.
Amelia Pond. That was a great name. And what sort of job's a kissogram?
I go to parties and I kiss people. With outfits. It's a laugh.
You were a little girl 5 minutes ago.
You're worse than my aunt.
I'm the doctor. I'm worse than everybody's aunt. And that is not how I'm introducing myself.
What's up there? What are you looking for?
Okay. Planet this size. Two poles. Your basic molten core. They're going to need a 40% fission blast. But they'll have to power up first, won't they? That's 20 minutes.
Prisoner Zero will be taking
the human residence,
or the human residence will be incinerated.
20 minutes to the end of the world.
Prisoner Zero will be taking the human residence, or the human residence will be incinerated.
Thank you once again, Dave. Dave took some time out and puts these clips together for us, and I'm ever so grateful. So thank you so much, Dave. So let's
pleasure.
Get into the queue, and as I said, Podshock supporting subscribers will get preference. So if you're not already a subscriber, go to thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net and become one. It really does help make a difference and allows us to continue and produce these shows. So we're going to go to Graham first, and then Anthony, and then Darth.
Yep.
Hello, Graham. Graham is our correspondent in Germany. So,
hello and good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Fair enough there. Excellent. So I'll rattle through this, so we'll give everybody a fair chance there. So, first point. The episode for me was energetic, just like Robot was back in the beginning of Tom Baker's time. Mm-hmm. Point two was the nod to Spearhead of Space and the Spearhead from Space and the movie where the Doctor borrows his clothes on a permanent basis. But I really like the way that Amy sort of looked with a bit of a sort of lustery look at him as he was getting changed there.
No, I will not look away. I thought that was fantastic.
Are you not going to look away? Nope. Which I thought was that was rather brilliant. And like yourself, Lewis, there's all those little lines mm-hmm. in between. Like yourself, you just played one of them. At the moment there,
mm-hmm.
The ball fox, a ball, box falls out of sky, man falls out of box, eats fish custard. You know what I think? That must be one scary crack. It's lines like that. They're all throughout the episode there.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's not over, it's not silly. It's not overwhelming. It doesn't take away from the story. It just accents it. And that's all. And that's what it should do.
Yeah, and it feels right. Absolutely feels right. I can't say more than that. I've got it right in the middle because I've only put seven points down. But the only real negative was, for me, the only negative was the scene where Amy goes into the spare room after finally actually seeing the spare room from the corner of her eye. And it was the unfortunate bad layering of that scene. You could see that she was more than definitely stood in front of a green screen with the alien being dropped in, and that's probably where the layering went to pot. It wasn't much cop because of where the creature, the patient, not patient zero, that's Big Finch, but prisoner zero was hanging down. You could see that they didn't quite get where the prisoner zero was. They didn't quite get the clarity between Amy and the background level, which is the room. So unfortunately, you know, you probably know for yourself there from working with Photoshop and such stuff that sometimes bad layering can literally put off the shot a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Point five. Here's very, very. I mean. You know, the nickname, I gave it myself because I'm a big fan of Troughton. I'm a really big fan of Troughton. I try and get my hands on as much of Troughton stuff as possible.
We wouldn't have ever noticed that, Graham, you know, being that your core name is the second doctor.
Just a bit. You know, it's little things like that, but he's... He admits himself. I watched a few other things that he's been on. There's a program called that my sister mentioned. I found a little sneaky way into iPlayer so I could actually watch it. It's called The One Show on BBC One. And he mentions it there again that Troughton was the one he really picked off. But for me, he was not only Troughton, he had very Troughton-esque, but he had the sort of... the bravado of Pertwee. Mm-hmm. You know, Pertwee wasn't really afraid to go into anything with a whole bunch of action. And then the eccentricity, or a lighter eccentricity, of Tom Baker, which I thought was absolutely brilliant. So for me, he's a combination of those three. Now, Ken picked up on the myth computers as much as I did there. But probably, I don't know if he saw it, but I certainly did. It wasn't just the myth laptop, which was running some sort of Linux, as my son noticed, but it was also the fact that the monitoring computers in the hospital themselves also had this myth logo on it as well.
Oh, really? Okay.
Which they're literally all over the place. Mm-hmm. I mean,
so it's definitely going to play a factor somewhere along the line.
So it looks like a factor, and I mentioned it to Dave earlier today, but also talking about computers, that this monitor that in the new TARDIS, I absolutely love, but this monitor, which is looks like a hangback to the movie. Where it was a proper like a TV screen sort of thing. If you notice, the actual crack, the shape of the crack, seemed to be also on the monitor. You know, there was an audio sine wave, but underneath that audio sine wave was this crack. So it looks like he's monitoring it. So that for me, sort of,
unless cracks are appearing everywhere.
Yeah, which is probably what which was Prisoner Zero is making point of, and that. A little thing I wish they'd done a bit better, and it's only like it would have been a couple of feet would have made a difference, but I love the way where the ladder came in through the window in the hospital. Mm-hmm. That little amount that came in, there was no really point, no. Okay, it was a little bit of dramatization for maybe, but there was no real sense for them to send in the words, the doctor sent a text message, Duck. Yeah.
You think maybe if it broke the glass coming in, maybe it would have made a difference? Or?
Well,
I think somebody's put in the text already that Duck might be the new B. And I can't remember who put it in. I'll try and look back on the text.
Duck Pond's Duck, yeah. But the fact is that they went close to the window and then ducked, which I found a little odd. The last point would be, I like the cameos from famous British TV series that were all over the place. The one and two faces, I know them, I can't place them where they were, like the last form that Prisoner Zero took before it changed into the Doctor and young Amelia. This woman there, she looks ever so familiar, but I can't place her face there. But then you had the grandmother from the lad in the bedroom there. She played Victor Meldrew's wife in One Foot in the Grave. And it's, you know, little people over there. So it's sort of continuing the stunt casting that happened in J&T's and RTD's time, but on a better level. You know, getting better actors, you know, which is kind of funny. So now you've had Richard Wilson, who played Victor Meldrew, and now you've got the woman who played his wife, so that Annette Crosby, so that was pretty good as well. But otherwise, points wise, 4.75 out of 10. I've got ever so little niggles, and it's literally only so ever little niggles.
Four and three quarters out of ten. Out of five TARDIS drones, how would you give it?
Out of five.
Yeah.
You mean, I mean 4.75 like out of five TARDIS drones, five. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
One duck off a five. No.
A quarter less duck after five. Yeah, I could do that. It was everything I was looking for from the new series. Quite literally everything I was looking for. I wasn't disappointed. And I put the post up today there on the Gallifreyan Embassy on the blog. And like Ken says, and it was Ken that invented that, and it's now available on a T-shirt in Moffat We Trust. And I'm so looking forward. Okay, maybe not to the next episode, but the episode after that, which is the Victory of the Daleks. I want to see how that plays out.
I'm looking forward to all of them. All right. Well, thank you, Graham. I'm going to cut you off so that we can get to, since time is limited today. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
And it was Prisoner Zero said the RB's the new duck. Okay.
In our chat form, that is not
in our chat forum. Yeah, he's not on audio.
I'm like, Prisoner Zero didn't say that. All right. Thanks again, Graham.
Okay.
Cheers.
No problems. Bye-bye.
All right. And now we're Anthony's up. So, hello, Anthony. Welcome to Doctor Who Podshock Live.
Hey there, Lewis. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Very good. I have and thank you for welcoming, Lewis. Good to talk to you again. I haven't talked to you since ICON.
All from last week ago. It's been so long.
Yeah, I know. 1 week ago. Yeah, I know. Really long. I think we've tweeted a couple of times since then. But I think this episode was really, I personally, and I agree with Graham's points 110%, so I'm not going to rehash his points and just throw some things out there that I thought. I personally expected, and I'm not going to talk about any spoilers that I saw ahead of time, that it was going to hit the ground running, that it was going to be a bridge between 10th and establish him as the 11th. And the Doctor, finally at the end of the episode. But I expected it to be a little fast-paced. I knew once it said he had 20 minutes to save the world that this was going to be one step after the other to, you know, get some action going, get some storyline going. And what I really liked was that young Amelia met the Doctor, and then as her life progressed, she turns out she thought maybe it was a dream or she had to see psychiatrists mm-hmm. and stuff, but she established her own stories within that. Yeah. And what kid doesn't dream when they're young and they're run into something fantastic or they read a good story or something that they try to live that dream, they sort of embody it a little bit. And then to me, that reminded me a little bit of C.S. Lewis's line, The Witch in the Wardrobe, and that you have the wardrobe and they step into another world. Like what the Doctor says, what do you have for me this time? And it's that sort of transportational device between worlds in which she's welcome with. I really liked how he does change his clothes, and I have to agree with Ken's points. To me, that is a nod a little bit to the 8th Doctor 96 film, where he just goes through the hospital locker room and looks for clothes, and you have little nods at certain things.
Even the 3rd Doctor did the same thing. But.
Yeah, John Pertwee, right, exactly. Yeah.
Literally, and to me, the bridge... We're going to move, to me, in my opinion, and now, yes, I've seen some of the, and read some of the spoilers in the news articles and stuff, but I have my limit as to how much I will read.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge talk, the bridge chat, the speech that he gave, that should end, to me, the end of what we've seen prior, that he's establishing himself as the Doctor, and that's moving forward. That's why I liked the flashes of each individual Doctor,
mm-hmm.
and it honors each one prior to him, which reminds me a little bit of the what was the name of the device in the next Doctor that he was flashing the images for Jackson Lake?
Yeah, those memory cells or whatever they were called.
Oh yeah,
the cyber thing. To me, that was that he was alluding to those memories that Jackson Lake had, and here we're seeing a little bit of the same thing, but now you have the 10th Doctor in there, and anybody that's come into the series from that will hopefully understand now that this is where it goes, this is where it evolves, and this mm-hmm. is where it steps forward.
Well, he literally steps forward. You see the Doctor steps forward through that hologram,
right.
Says, I am the Doctor, you know, he's something to the point, you know, no, he pronounces himself as the Doctor.
Right, and that's what I found fantastic about that was that, you know, he's breaking that barrier now. As he stepped through that hologram, all of that is now behind him, and you're getting a fresh, new Doctor.
Yes.
And for all those people who might be listening to this later and are shouting at their screens, the word is info stamps, as the 6th Doctor and Chasm has put in the text, and Charlie.
Charlie P, yes. So how would you, rate this?
Oh, I definitely... If you're going to give it 4 TARDIS groans, I'm going to go
with
5.
Graham.
5. I meant within the 5 TARDIS groans. Graham and Ken, I'll agree with them with their 4 3/4 TARDIS groans. There were some allusions to the Russell T. Davies stuff, and I could see the pattern. I didn't pick up on I have to rewatch it. I didn't pick up on the little company names, the little labels that Graham was talking about and Ken. I'll have to rewatch it to see that. I do agree with you, Lewis, also that, you know, you want some simpler stories where it's not this gloom and doom darkness thing.
One thing that surprised me, Ken didn't mention, the rewatchability of this. I've got a feeling
he said,
is going to be one you're going to watch lots of times.
Yeah, he said that he's going home.
I did say that, Dave.
I did
because I watched it twice, and I'm going for my third in about 2 hours.
Right, exactly. I think it's definitely rewatchable, and I have to agree with that. I want to see it again. Not only are we going to see it again at the DWI pub meet, on the 11th, but we're going to see the April 14th showing at the Village Cinema with Matt Smith and Stephen Moffat and all that.
One of the things I think that you what you were saying, Anthony, about him walking out of the other doctors is a clear indication by Stephen Moffat that this is my show, this is my doctor, this is the history, now here's the new one. It's
exactly.
Almost symbolic.
But it's still the same man.
Sort of,
it seemed like he was coming from the same cloth, so it's still the same person.
And it encapsulates, it encapsulates really what Ken, I've heard Ken say, and you, Lewis, as well, that this is a new doctor, new era, refreshes itself, evolved, and moves forward. This is where, you know, we're going with it. It's his doctor, it's his show now, and this is where I'm going with it. So it encapsulates all of what Doctor Who is about to me and to everybody else, I'm assuming here, that it evolves, it moves forward.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, well,
so I really have lots of hopes for the future of this, because if the trailer is any indication, the series trailer at the end of that, I have high hopes of that.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Anthony. We already plugged your book now last episode, we have a book signing event coming soon. We'll keep you posted. Keep listening to Doctor Who Podshaw.
Well, thank you, Lewis.
And thank you.
Final score is no TARDIS, no screwdriver, 2 minutes to spare.
Who the man?
Oh, so I'm never saying that again.
Well, that's rubbish. Who's that supposed to be?
It's you.
Me?
Is that what I look like?
You don't know?
Busy day.
Why me, though? You're linked with her. Why are you copying me?
Amy, don't just hear me. Listen. Remember the room in your house you couldn't see. Remember you went inside. I tried to stop you, but you did. You went inside.
Amy, dream about what you saw.
No.
Well done, Prison Zero. A perfect impersonation of yourself.
Prisoner Zero is located. Prisoner Zero is restrained.
What's in here?
I'm saving the world. I need a decent shirt. To hell with the raggedy.
Amy, he's taking his clothes off.
Turn your back if it embarrasses you.
Are you not going to turn your back?
Nope.
The doctor will see you now!
Is this world important?
Important? What's that mean, important? 6 billion people live here. Is that important? Are the peoples of this world guilty of any crime by the laws of the Atraxi?
No.
Okay.
I'm the doctor. Basically, run.
Okay, what have you got for me this time?
Look at you. Oh, you sexy thing. Look at you.
Sorry about running off earlier. Brand new TARDIS. Bit exciting.
You came back.
Of course I came back. I always come back.
Are you from another planet?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what do you think?
What?
Other planets want to check some out.
What does that mean?
It means, come with me.
Where?
Wherever you like.
All that stuff that happened, the hospital, the spaceships, Prisoner Zero.
Oh, don't worry, that's just the beginning, there's loads more.
Yeah, but those amazing things, all that stuff. That was 2 years ago.
Oh, oops.
Yeah.
So that's...
14 years.
14 years since Fish Custard. Amy Pond, the girl who waited, you've waited long enough. So, coming?
No.
You wanted to come 14 years ago?
I grew up.
Don't worry, I'll soon fix that. Where do you want to start?
Can you get me back for tomorrow morning?
It's a time machine. I can get you back for 5 minutes ago. Why? What's tomorrow?
Nothing. Just, you know, stuff.
All right, then. Back in time for stuff.
We're just going to move along because, again, we're just short on time today. So we're going to get to, I believe, Darth Skeptical is next. So welcome back, Darth.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am all right.
You know, I'm not nearly so convinced that this is such a radical redesign of the Doctor Who franchise as you guys are saying. It feels pretty damn RTD to me. In fact, so much so, I think that the plot is actually quite derivative of Smith and Jones. I mean, it's exactly the same plot, really, with a little bit of Girl in the Fireplace thrown in to explain how Amy gets there. And I was very disappointed in the nature of the plot and found it quite, well, not quite worth waiting 2 years for. Now, that said, there's... Well, I should talk a little bit more about the plot. And one of the niggles, aside from its obvious aping of Smith and Jones, is this whole thing that – I don't know why they did this. It was so stupid. The pre-title sequence, that's like a totally different production that was done 2 months, 2.5 months after principal photography wrapped on the episode. And they came back in and did this whole flying sequence, which is just – it's really bad. I mean, the first impression that you get of Matt Smith is him doing just these terrible gurns to the camera as he tries to avoid Big Ben splitting him up the crotch. And I just thought that was – it was terrible because it undermines what was the plot structure originally, wherein you don't see Matt Smith at all until he pops out of the TARDIS and says, I want an apple. And I just – I don't know why they did that. I don't know why they did it with a totally different production team. But it was just horrible, really. There's a lot of good in the episode. None of it is plot related. Certainly, I have no problem accepting Matt Smith as the Doctor. I never thought there was going to be a problem with Matt Smith. And he's proving to be the inspired choice that I kind of thought he was. I mean, this is a very Tom Baker casting move where you take somebody who's a complete unknown based purely upon their acting abilities and say, I think this guy can do it. And he can. Certainly nothing wrong with Karen Gillan. Occasional moments where I think she overacts slightly. But who cares, because she's gorgeous and because most of the time she hits the right notes anyway. But really the thing that surprised me the most about the entire episode was the performance of Caitlin Blackwood, which was just astonishing. And I've gone back and watched just the first 20 minutes just to get her.
Just for clarity's sake, I just wanted to point out that she plays young Amy Pond, Amelia, just in case for those that don't recognize her name.
The name, yeah, exactly. And she's one of the most fantastic child actors I've ever seen.
I have to agree.
Yeah, I mean, just you cannot take your eyes off of her. She's subtle. She is occasionally adult in her reactions. Just fantastic. And to be honest with you, I'd almost rather have her as the companion than Amy.
Well, funny when the Doctor first meets her, he treats her as a upcoming companion. He says, like, you know, don't go astray. Don't, you know, it was like giving him instructions on how to be a companion.
Right, and she just takes it, and they just have such great chemistry together. And in the shots where she's alone, you know, she's just can command the screen entirely herself, which is crazy. I mean, just crazy how good she is.
You also have to point out that he never talks down to her.
Exactly.
And usually in a television show, if there's a child, they suddenly start talking down to the child. Mm-hmm. He treats her as an equal, although he, of course, is being a bit childlike. Sorry, Doc.
No, but that's a great point.
It's a very good point. Yeah.
Well, he says to the grown-up Amy later, doesn't he? She says, well, I've grown up. He said, I'll soon sort you out of that.
I know. There's a great little interplay there, too. I think that the best scene in the entire thing for me is where she goes out and sits down on her suitcase and just waits, and the look on her face and everything. It's like it's one of those moments that's like I hope this isn't an unfair comparison, like Mark Hamill looking out over the face of Tatooine wondering what his fate is going to be. It's just a lovely, poignant moment. No words, but nevertheless scripted, and she just nails it. She nails how to sit quietly and convey an emotion. It's great. I also quite like the direction here. I would take issue with you'll have to forgive me, I'm not sure if it's in this show or the one I just did, but Nevertheless, some people have taken exception to the eye movement of the doctors as you go around to look at all the people who are in the square to figure out which one of them is doing something different. I thought that was great. I loved figuring out on the confidential how they accomplished it. I thought it was very interesting to have something new directorially put into Doctor Who, and you know, it's one of the reasons that I like Guris Lynn from the past, because he was always doing inventive things with the camera. I'm glad that they tried to push the envelope. And it's not just that. There are lots of little interesting
moments. For me, that
moments.
It wasn't a deal breaker. It just took me out of the story a little bit. If it was just handled a little bit differently, not so mechanically, if it was more organic or fluid or whatever, it made me think, it took me out and made me think, how they were shooting it and how it was being made. It just took me a little bit out of the story. But it wasn't a big thing.
I can understand. I mean, that's just personal preference, and that's cool that you didn't.
I think
like
they were just trying to make it clear to new viewers that the Doctor takes in a heck of a lot more than most people would, almost a photographic memory.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, the detail that apparently the Doctor sees is much more than one would have thought that he sees. And it's cool, in a sense, this is sort of doing something like the Eighth Doctor's first story, well, only story, in that you're giving a superhuman power kind of to the Doctor on his regeneration. And it's the same thing, with the Tenth Doctor, he was displayed to have the ability to regrow things. So it's interesting how these first episodes in the modern era are adding a little something in the regeneration sequence or the regeneration episode. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool.
So how would you rate this, Darth?
For plot, a zero, honestly.
Matt Smith?
An absolute zero on the plot. Matt Smith, fine. He's a five, I guess. I mean, he's great. I don't have any problem with the acting. I don't have any problem with, the dialogue itself or, capturing the basic essence of characters or anything like that. Wouldn't expect to with Stephen Moffat writing, but it's probably only about a three. It's certainly not the best season opener we've had in New Doctor Who. That still is, to me, Smith and Jones. Not the best regeneration. I still think that Christmas Invasion is better structurally than this thing is. But it's a promising start. Certainly, all the trailers have been very exciting, and everything's probably going to be fine with this season. But it's quite underwhelming to me. The lack of originality in the plot is really not good.
Okay. Well, we want you to hear varying different takes on it. So that's good. Well, Darth, I'm going to thank you. I need to wrap up the show. Yeah, I'm going to try to get one last call in, even though we're over an hour already. So and then I'm going to have to wrap things up. Everyone else in the queue, I do apologize, and please send in your feedback to us. And again, I have an appointment to make, so I can't really prolong the show. Thanks again, Darth. And so next in the queue is Mr. Charlie.
Hi, Lloyd.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Dave. Oh, I'm all right. I'll make this quick as possible. Love the new title sequence. It's one of those things after, since 2005, we had the same sort of title sequence, and seeing this new one was sort of, I don't want to say it was a breath of fresh air, but sort of a revelation, new title sequence. I like the minor characters and how they fit in with the story and how they all recognized the Doctor as when he shows up, like Jeff and his grandma and Rory, even the ice cream man that appears, and then that elderly man that when Amy locks the Doctor and he just shows up for a second, go drink your coffee. Okay. Yeah, I like the direction. I like that opening bit where it goes from the time tunnel to the windmill. I thought that was a nice transition. And, the little montage of him eating the food, the whole, him banging the fork on the table, beans, bad beans, and him throwing the bread out of the house and the cat screaming. I like the tires interior and the exterior. I like that sense, there's that alarm clock when they go, you see it going flat, the clock that goes ahead when they go ahead in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just, you know, I like the overall. It just, about 4.5.
Okay.
Yeah, 4.5 tires.
So obviously there were maybe some points of it that you didn't like so much because it didn't reach a 5. So, any negatives that you wanted to nitpick on, or
just, you know, that the whole bit with Rory and the doctor, she came out. She's of all the characters, she came out as most two-dimensional, one-dimensional. You know, she's sort of a crab apple, but you know, she got killed off, so maybe we don't have to worry about her anymore.
Mm.
But and that kind of reminded me of Smith and Jones, sort of, you know, like the whole bit where the naive doctor and the young the up and coming person or whatever knows more than the doctor knows, and then they get but that's their comeuppance. So maybe that was probably only a little.
Yeah, just to avoid confusion, we're talking about the medical doctor in the hospital.
Right, Dr. Ramsden,
whatever. Not the doctor.
No, not the doctor. No. I also like that bit where he Matt Smith's on the phone calling back the aliens, the Atraxes or something. And he says, you know, sorry in advance. He's like, why? Oh, for your phone bill. Just that little bit. That was nice.
Yeah, lots of little things hidden away there. I mean, some of the stuff I need to rewatch again and discover because there's a lot to absorb. All right. Well, thank you so much, Charlie.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks. And thanks, everyone. I do apologize. We do have to keep the show short today, so I know there are more people in the queue. And again, I encourage you to send your feedback to us. And we're going to be doing probably an extra show about the 11th hour and the new era of Doctor Who. But this one will go out as well as, in our feeds. And if you get your feedback into us, within the next few days, we can include it in the show. And same thing, Dave, your clips won't go to waste either. We'll put those in post-production as well.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And on behalf of everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. And it'll probably be, I'm guessing, probably at our usual time, 5 o'clock, unless we'll talk to Dave and see how this works out with the Cultum Collective.
No, we finished early. We'll get out of your way certainly by 4:30.
Okay. So anyway, we'll discuss during the week timing wise, but it will be the 4:30 or 5 next week, and we'll be reviewing the next episode of Matt Smith. And the next episode is The Beast Below. That's coming to BBC One this Saturday, and we'll be back on Sunday at 5 p.m. doing a live over-the-net review once again. So I hope you can join us then. As promised, I gave an opportunity for listeners to send in their feedback for this show if they sent it in within the next day or so after the recording, and we had one listener send in their feedback that way. But before we go to that feedback, here is some more moments from the 11th hour.
What is this place? Where am I?
Ledworth.
Oh, that's good. Fantastic, that is. 20 minutes to save the world, and I've got a post office, and it's shut.
Spinning, why is it going dark? So what's wrong with the sun?
Nothing. End of the world, 20 minutes.
Well, better talk quickly, then.
Amy, I am going to need my car back.
Just in a bit now. Go and have coffee.
I'm a time traveller.
I don't believe you.
Just believe me for 20 minutes.
What do we do?
Stop that nurse. The sun's going out and you're photographing a man and a dog. Why? Amy.
Hi. Oh, this is Rory. He's a friend.
Boyfriend.
Kind of boyfriend.
Amy. Man and dog, why?
Because he can't be there because he's
in a hospital.
In a coma. Yeah.
See, that ship up there is scanning this area for non-terrestrial technology. And nothing says non-terrestrial like a sonic screwdriver. I think someone's gonna notice, don't you? He's here! Prisoner Zero is here! We need to drive it into the open. The TARDIS, no
Screwdriver, 17 minutes. Come on.
Think. So that thing, that hid in my house for 12 years.
Multiforms can live for millennia. 12 years is a pit stop.
So how come you show up again on the very same day that lot do, the same minute?
They're looking for him, but they followed me. They saw me through the crack. Got a fix. They're only late because I am.
What's he on about?
Nurse boy, give me your phone.
How can he be real? He was never real.
Phone, now. Give me.
Photos. They're all the coma patients.
Yep.
No, they're all the multiform. 8 comas, 8 disguises for prisoner zero.
He had a dog, though. There's a dog in a coma.
Well, the coma patient dreams he's walking a dog. Prisoner zero gets a dog.
Laptop. Give me.
No.
Oh, wait, it's fine. Hang on.
Give it here.
Ah, and here they all are. All the big boys. NASA, Jodrell Bank, Tokyo Space Center, Patrick Moore.
Wheel.
Pay attention. I am writing a computer virus. Very clever, super fast, and a tiny bit alive, but don't let on. And why am I writing it on a phone? Never mind. You'll find out. Mine resets every counter it can find. Clocks, calendars, anything with a chip will default at zero at exactly the same time.
Doctor, we're at the hospital, but we can't get through.
Don't worry. I've commandeered a vehicle. Amy, what's happening? Talk to me!
We're in the coma ward, but it's here. It's getting in.
Oh, dear little Amelia Pond. I've watched you grow up, waiting for her magic doctor to return. But not this time, Amelia.
Hello? Am I late? No! 3 minutes to go. Take the disguise off. I'll find you in a heartbeat. Nobody dies.
The Atraxi will kill me this time. If I am to die, let there be fire.
Okay. You came to this world by opening a crack in space and time. Do it again. Just leave.
I did not open the crack. The cracks in the skin of the universe, don't you know where they came from? You don't, do you? The universe is cracked. The Pandorica will open. Silence will fall.
And silence will fall on this podcast, but not after we get this last piece of feedback. As I promised, I gave an opportunity for people to send in their feedback after the show. And Dr. Philip Cerner did just that, and he sent in his feedback on the 11th hour after the live show. So this is some recorded feedback from, once again, Dr. Phil. Not that Phil, the other Phil.
Hello, Lewis, Ken, and James. It's Dr. Phil here in the Chicago area with a few thoughts on the 11th hour. You could see in the confidential how excited, a childlike glee that Stephen Moffat had when saying, I don't get tired of saying this, I am the showrunner and head writer of Doctor Who. And you could tell that he's brought his A-game. He took a great page from the John Nathan Turner era and filmed the 11th hour not first, which I thought was a great idea in order to make a strong debut story, which I think Matt Smith needed and deserved. And I think that it will pay off in great dividends later in the series. First things first, the opening, while I'm one, I read lots of spoilers. I see every clip I can online before the episode airs. I was at first a little wary of the opening shot that was put up online. I'm like, oh no, it's the corny, heavy-handed Murray Gold music. And in fact, it feels like in the opening scene, the pre-credits music, it sets it up like it's a David Tennant story. And immediately, by throwing you into the opening credits, you know, no. The show has regenerated, and nothing else in the episode, musically speaking, is the same from there on out. And in fact, whereas I have often bemoaned Murray Gold's music in the past, because I'm a real fan of the music concrete sort of style of the original series, with a much wider tonal palette, I think that Murray Gold really delivers in this story. Now, why am I mentioning Murray Gold first before even mentioning Matt Smith? Because even before you see Matt Smith's face, we have Murray Gold's music. And while listening to the MP3 that you can download of the theme music, which already is a ringtone on my cell phone, listening to it by itself, I'm like, well, this is kind of bland and uninteresting. But in context of the actual opening credits, it's great. But I must say that I like the fact that the time vortex is wider, the TARDIS spins around in a much more dramatic way. It grabbed me from that first moment. I'll admit that I watched that opening credits about 30 times before actually watching the episode. So I'm like, yes. My Doctor Who is back. And where I can relate to Ken and Lewis very well on this is that growing up in the United States, I watched Doctor Who on PBS. before I even watched an episode of Doctor Who, Attack of the Cybermen was my first episode on PBS. I had already read countless comics, source books galore, the David Howe ones, the Time Traveler's Guide, Doctor Who the early years. I had all of the episode guides that would have all the synopses. I did not have the cultural experience or the trepidation of, oh my gosh, is this new Doctor going to be any good? Because I'd already read up about it. And this is the first time I felt like I really got to partake in that wonderful English tradition of worrying, is our new Doctor going to be any good? And damn, he was very good. But Matt Smith, out the door, acting in spades, brought his A-game. And the thing that really disturbed me in the open the first 25 minutes is that one scene, you think I'm going to say something scary? No, no, no. How could any actor be expected to sit there and eat fish fingers and custard? I'm like, oh my God, and carry on a scene so beautifully? That guy deserves a tip for doing that alone. Was brilliant. I thought that casting Karen Gillan's cousin as a younger version of Amelia Pond was brilliant. I hope that we get to see her again later in some sort of emotional flashbacks and that sort of thing. I mean, it's not really necessary, but I thought she did the little girl did a great job. I thought the plotting was fabulous in the story. The new TARDIS, the shots I saw from the Radio Times looked overblown, theatrical, and I was like, oh God, this looks silly. But in context, they really know how to make that TARDIS set look great on screen. And Jesus, we don't even get a full view of the console right away. They really knew how to build up not only Matt Smith's real introduction into being the Doctor, he practically walks through David Tennant saying, hello, I'm the Doctor. Basically, run. You know, I thought that was brilliant. They did that with the Doctor. They did that with the TARDIS. Everything is exactly as it needed to be. And I think we have very safe hands. And all hail Hinchcliffe II. And I will only say that this one time because Moffat deserves much better than that. But I think that we are on the verge of a new golden age of Doctor Who since that Hinchcliffe era. And I'm very grateful that we have our show back a full season, and this should be a very exciting year indeed. Thank you guys for your podcast, as always, and keep up the great work.
And thank you, Phil. That was Dr. Phil. And he was obviously driving in his car, leaving that feedback, so that was that background noise there. And a great job doing that as well. So thank you, Phil, once again. And thank you all for listening to this live show. Well, mostly live. There's some... This isn't live right now. I'm actually speaking from the dead. No. It's late at night. Well, early morning for most of the world, but in my world, it's rather late. So we're going to wrap this show up here. Once again, see you next week for our review of The Beast Below. Once again, Doctor Who Podchuck supporting subscribers will get preference in the queue in the live show. And if you're not already a subscriber, go to thegallifreyembassy.org or podchuck.net, and right there on the top, there's going to be a banner to become a Doctor Who Podchuck supporting subscriber. So click on that. That will give you instructions on how you can become a Doctor Who Podchuck supporting subscriber and help support this show and make a big difference. In between Doctor Who Podchuck episodes, be sure to visit our website. Once again, that's gallifreyembassy.org or podchuck.net. We have forums there, which has ongoing discussions. There's reviews that are taking place right now on the 11th hour. So that's really interesting. Actually, the website has been very, very active as of recently. So and that's to be expected with the new series. In addition to the website, you can follow us all on Twitter. You can follow Ken Deep at twitter.com/KenDeep. I'm at twitter.com/LewisTrapani. You can follow Dave Cooper at twitter.com/DaveAC. And of course, you can follow Doctor Who Podchuck at twitter.com/Podchuck. So on behalf of myself, Ken, and James will be coming back. He just wasn't able to be on this show. Cheers, everyone. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
And the final score is no TARDIS, no screwdriver, 2 minutes to spare. Who the man? Oh, so I'm never saying that again.